The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. Joining us as always, Dan Trillaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Craig. I'm well. Good to connect today.
Yep. And Eric joins us today. He's a gambler in recovery as well. Eric, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Craig and Dan. Good to be with you guys. How are you?
Yeah, appreciate it. So let's get right into it. When was the last wager you've made?
My date is June 15th, 2021. So a little over 3 years now.
That's awesome. Congratulations. I imagine life is much better today than it was the day before your last bet, yeah?
Absolutely. I am unrecognizable in a good way today compared to where I was before.
Yeah, I get it. So let's get into it. When were you first exposed to gambling? How old were you and what type of gambling was it?
Yeah, for me, it started when I was about 17, just pretty innocent. Card games with family and friends. And then when I was 18, that's when I got introduced to the racetrack. So those were my two forms of gambling for a few years. And then when I was 21, like many people, that's when I went to Vegas. And I live in Los Angeles, California. So that's a quick 4-hour car ride. And that's when I first got introduced to the sports and race book. And my whole life growing up was around sports, playing it, watching it, et cetera. So when I got to see the big TV screens, and you guys know the horse and race or the horse and sports book are right next to each other, just about in any casino. So that's when I like fell in love with the idea of isolation and escaping, which is really what my kind of gambling was. And that really took me down a very dark path.
So what's interesting about that is nobody knows that they're going to find comfort in, as you said, the isolation of gambling until you're doing it and exhibiting that type of behavior. So I wonder, when you first walked into that casino, did you go with a group of buddies and, hey, it's our first time in Vegas, we're 17 years old, let's see if our IDs work and, you know, let's put $50 on a game? Was it that type of thing? Or was it, man, I walked in there and they had me at hello?
Yeah, I mean, not buddies. I'd gone with some family members and kind of the same family were the card games and the racetrack, right? So it wasn't so much. I didn't really have friends that gambled. It was really more family. Yeah. And that's what we all kind of like to do, as opposed to table games or card rooms. It was the horses and the sports.
God. So, Dan, let me bring you in here because, you know, one of the reasons I'm in favor of the widespread legalization of wagering is that it mainstreams the conversation about gambling. And by mainstreaming it, it'll ultimately make it easier for people like me, you and Eric, to raise our hand and ask for help and acknowledge we have a problem without, you know, feeling like, you know, we're committing some type of crazy vice in a back alley, you know, the way it was when you and I grew up. It also means, yep, a lot more people are gambling for the first time. We'll obviously go down a bad road. But I'm wondering, you know, when you hear Eric start telling his story about his family, where it was his kind of entry point into gambling, and there's something they did together, if that rings a certain way to you.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, Eric, thanks for sharing that. I can relate with respect to being exposed at an early age, horse racing, sports betting with family, and you start off seeing it as a good time. It's fun. And you don't think there's going to be potential harm because we don't learn about it in school. You know, one of the things that I see a big need for around the country is K-12 education. And we just don't talk about how, what the potential harms can be. It's just a fun way to bond with your family or friends and stuff. So, yeah, I think that is a massive concern and one that we need to do a better job of. Having regulated sports betting keeps it above board. It allows for enforcement. It allows us to normalize the conversation so we don't feel the shame and the stigma. But we also have to reinforce it in the school level, K-12.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm getting at is, it's one thing if you have a relative that likes to play the horses or goes to a casino and that's your entry point, like Eric's is, but now you're going to have groups and groups of young guys and gals sitting in somebody's apartment doing the same exact thing, you know, obviously on their cell phone, yeah, while watching a random, like, Wednesday night Pac-12, you know, basketball game. So, that's why I brought it up. The socialization around gambling is something I don't think we've ever seen on this scale. Eric, for
that's
you,
a fair point.
When you went into that casino and you kind of, you know, got bit by the bug, walk me through how quickly gambling became a bigger part of your life.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just slow, progressive deterioration is what I would say. So, you know, as that was going on through my 20s, and if I could take a quick step back here and to kind of parallel where this all emotionally came from, because I think, as we all know, in gambling addiction, it generally stems from some kind of emotional trauma earlier than you start gambling. And so for me, as I would learn in recovery over the last few years, the parallels to what I went through from not being about 12 years old to 22, a decade-long emotional trauma. And that's because I started to realize, as I got into middle school and approached puberty, that I was different. I started to look at guys the way most guys look at girls.
Okay.
And that's when I realized that I was gay. And for the next decade, I emotionally learned all of the similar behaviors that I would replicate years later as a gambling addict. The shame, the fear, not wanting to be around anybody, total isolation. It was like, please God, one day just let me wake up and not be gay. Just like when I became an addict, at some point saying, please God, let me wake up and not have this compulsion to gamble. And so even when I came out of the closet when I was 22 and explored that part of my life, and I've had a wonderful life and meeting my partner when, you know, I was 24, all that was great. But the problem is that I never learned how to process my feelings and emotions properly. And so even though I dealt with my life much better for who I was as a person, I was already starting to replicate the same behaviors towards gambling addiction into my 20s.
That's great insight.
I
feel great, you know, pain for you, trying to imagine what that 10 years of your life was like. And I'm wondering, and I'm assuming I'm right on this, you've kind of put that together now after the fact, as opposed to once you had, you know, kind of opened up to people about your sexuality and found an amazing partner for life and all those things that are really healthy, that gambling then replicated the way you felt for 10 years about coming to terms with your sexuality. Were you aware of that in the moment? Or is this something that now that you can look back on your life with clarity, you can put those two things together?
Yeah, it's definitely just been in the last 3 years, right, as I've dived into recovery and really worked hard on myself and where all this stemmed from. You know, I think as I was just getting more knee deep into gambling, I just got sucked in and I just kept going. And
which, if I can interrupt for a sec, pardon this term, the crazy thing about that is you used gambling to make yourself feel better about, you know, your kind of coming of age and figuring out who you are and the fact that you're attracted to men and you are gay. And yet the thing you went to for salvation is the thing that ultimately caused you even more pain.
That's exactly right. Like, I got comfortable in the pain.
Right.
Even though I got much more comfortable being a happy gay man, it was like I had to go replace that with another thing to disappear into, because I just never knew how to process life. And that's really what happened for me. And gambling was so easy because, again, it was all surrounding the things that I loved most in my life, and that was sports. And it was never a financial issue for me when I started gambling. And even in my early days, I think in addiction in my 20s, I still didn't have financial problems. I wasn't gambling for money. It was never about money for me. And as even I got into an extraordinary amount of debt and lost my entire savings and 401k and went into ruin, even then it was never about money.
Yeah, people don't quite understand that part. And you and I have great commonality in that, where it was never, I guess there's a point, you know, if you're winning a lot of money or you're wagering a lot of money, it is about money to a point. I want to be clear about that. But the big picture is, we all got to a point, and I'll own this as well, where it had nothing at all to do with money. It was about how gambling allowed us to feel in the moment while we were gambling, and you could have huge wins and huge losses, and it, you know, it became somewhat irrelevant. Let me take a quick break on that. I will continue on with Eric and Dan on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
All right, welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Really interesting conversation with Eric, a recovering gambler out in California, and of course, Dan Chilaro. All right, so there's a lot to unpack there, Eric, and I know 30 minutes isn't going to do it justice. Walk me through, I know we're going to fast forward a lot through your story, and I apologize for that. How old were you and where were you in life when you can now look back and recognize that gambling had really taken over your life and was a real problem for you?
I think when I discovered the online wagering, and that's when I probably was about 29 or 30, I'd say 2001, is when it went from having to go to Vegas or the racetrack to now being able to do it 24/7 on my phone. Initially through the offshore accounts, because obviously sports legalization other than Vegas or Atlantic City wasn't available here. And the same thing with the horse races, you know, through legalized horse racing online through the states, I could do that. So my life just became like a 20-year spiral of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And even when I wasn't in action, I was always thinking about it. I was completely consumed with gambling, and it destroyed every single part of my life.
So let me ask that. Was there a point where your boyfriend at the time, if you had one, or your partner at the time, came to you and said, hey, come on, man, what's going on? Like, you're not here even when you're here, and you're acting irrationally, and I think there's something going on. Did that happen or no?
No, because, well, first off, we always kept our finances separate, so okay. It financially, it never appeared. And like all of us, you know, we figure out how to become masterful liars. And he knew I gambled, you know, he had been to Vegas with me. He knew I occasionally went to the racetrack, but just the depth of what was happening to me, I absolutely kept that totally isolated. And, just like the functioning alcoholic, sure. I became the functioning gambling addict. And even in my professional life, I was able to, you know, in corporate America, get, you know, several promotions through executive management. And I don't know how all that happened when I was literally consumed 24/7.
Well, like you said, you become a better liar than anything else in life. Did it cost you the relationship, or are you guys still together?
We had split up about 6 years in, not specifically because, well, definitely gambling was a component for me, but that was not the known reason. There were other issues. We reunited about 15 years ago in 2009.
And you're still together today?
We are still together today. He's a big part of the recovery story, and that's because he's done so much work on himself through Gammonon, the program that allows for 12 steps for the people affected by gambling. And, we're in a much better place today, but it was a really, really painful time of about, 3 years from the time I finally acknowledged to him, 2018, 2019 of the depths of what was really going on. And there was tremendous financial damage, including a massive bailout that I allowed him to do for me along the way on false pretense that the debt I was in had nothing to do with gambling. And because of the big hearted person he is and the fixer that he always has been in his life, he thought he could fix me. And well, we all know where that ends.
So for a lot of us, myself included, Dan included, there's that, for lack of a better description, that like bottom of the barrel moment, like the last day, like when the walls are caving in and, the financial problems become too much, where we all have these stories that we tell, many of us do at least, where this was when it all blew up. I got arrested. Dan did time as well. Was there a moment, like a singular moment that you look back on, like that final day, 3 years ago when you did wager? What was your kind of final straw that made you eventually recognize and admit, A, I got a problem, B, I got to go get help, and C, I'm not gambling anymore? Did you have one of those types of, terrible nights or days?
Absolutely. It's etched in my mind forever. It was June 13th, 2021. It was a Sunday morning, and I had one credit card left that I had not utilized. And it was a small limit, like $500. And I always said to myself, no matter how bad of a situation I'm in, and I know the depths of how ugly this is for me at this point, I won't use that card. I got to have something for an emergency. And about 10 minutes after thinking that through and playing the tape, I used it. Within minutes of betting on some random sporting stuff, it was gone. And moments later, my partner came into the room and he said, you know, we haven't kind of reconciled your accounts, because by this point I had turned over financial stuff and he had access to see my accounts, but he was dealing with some other stuff in his life where he kind of wasn't paying attention for a little while, and he was trusting me because I had some abstinence time, or so he thought, through doing some counseling on the side individually. I wasn't yet in recovery. And I said, you know what's going on, don't you? And he said, know what? And I said, you know, I've been gambling again. I did it again. And, you know, Craig and Dan, for me, it was the worst emotional moment, because the pain and fear in his eyes that I saw that day, it was the lowest I ever felt in my life. And I really, in that moment, wished I was dead. And so he said, this is too much. I don't know what else to do. We need to talk to your counselor immediately. And that's when it was 2 days later on June 15th. Had an appointment with the counselor, and she had told me from the get-go that I should go to GA, and I just refused to do it because of all my misconceptions about what GA could do for me. And she said, I'm going to just tell you what I told you a year and a half ago when we started talking. You got to go to GA. The people in that fellowship are going to be able to do what I can't do for you as a therapist. And that was the first night on June 15th, 2 days later, that I went into my first GA meeting, and I haven't looked back since.
We're going to get to the good stuff here in one sec. Dan, I want to bring you back in for a moment. You know, you and I talk a lot over the, 4.5 years we've done this show, that, you know, while we're the ones that are the addicts and we're the ones that have to, you know, kind of conquer our demons and get help, whether it's GA, a therapist, you know, church, temple, whatever it takes to get on the right path, we don't tell the stories of the hurt we cause to the people that love us the most and support us the most, our family and our best friends. And hearing Eric talk about that brings me right back to where I was, you know, now just over 6 years ago, when I still deal today, 6 years later, with the damage I caused to the people I love the most.
Yeah, Craig, you know, the impact on the family is massive. And that's something we have to talk about. You know, Eric highlighted that. It's a massive, because we need relationships in recovery. You know, addiction is so isolating. You know, for all the shame and the sorrow that we cause ourselves and others, we isolate, and we're so ashamed and so guilty that we need relationships in recovery. And without those, we can't have a long-term sustainable recovery. And Eric, you hit it on the head. I mean, just having a partner that supports you and is doing the hard work also really makes a difference. And Gammonon is a great tool for those impacted loved ones and affected others.
So before we let you go, Eric, and thank you for that, Dan, you know, there's a good side to this story. There's an upside. It's called recovery. And it's been 3 years for you, which is awesome. Very proud of you. You should be really proud of yourself. I guess the first thing for you is, what, if anything, did you replace the gambling with, the amount of time you spent on gambling? Because I always say to people, they have no idea what it's like if they don't have experience with addiction. All the mental space and time that I used on gambling, even, you know, just when am I going to gamble? Where am I going to gamble? Money, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, how have you found the ability to replace that amount of mental space that you used to spend on gambling?
Yeah, some of it is just reconnecting with, you know, friends that I put to the side during all those years. You know, playing some sports like, you know, tennis and golf that I, you know, also put by the wayside. But honestly, the number one thing that I've done with most of my time is give back to recovery through GA. I spend an enormous amount of time in that space, in the program, giving back, working on myself with a sponsor. I sponsor several guys involved at a trustee level. So I've really dove into recovery, because for me, Craig and Dan, why wouldn't you give back to the thing that for me not only saved my life, but has now given me a purpose?
Sure.
and faith on how I want to live my life going forward. And, you know, like, for example, I recently made a decision to leave corporate America after 30 years in a high paying job, because I no longer felt any fulfillment from kind of a checking the box financial job. And I really want to now spend the rest of my days, and however I can carve out a career, if you will, in the recovery space, and hopefully all my years in executive management and leadership allows me to find that place. Because for me, nothing replaces seeing somebody else like me who came in as broken of a human being as you could possibly be, having absolutely no hope. And for my life to be completely turned around in 3 years, watching that happen for other people, there is nothing more gratifying than that in my life. So that's where I've replaced a lot of my time.
I have a strange question for you. You dealt with your gambling addiction as a young adult in your 20s, and you dealt with coming to terms with your sexuality, obviously, as an immature teenager. And I'm wondering, when you look back on your life, was it harder for you to come to terms with being gay and open up about who you were as a human being? Or was it harder to come to terms with the fact that you're a gambling addict and share that part of your life with the people that care about you?
Wow, that is a great question, Craig. I mean, both are just absolutely terrifying journeys. And so it's hard to say which one was harder. I mean, I guess just because the gambling addiction spanned, you know, 25 plus years versus, let's say, 10 years of my coming out of the closet process, and just the amount of destruction, I think, that I did, not just to myself, but to other people during the addiction. I think finally coming to terms with it and accepting the fact that I had no chance to ever gamble responsibly, and I had to admit that I was powerless in order for me to start having a chance in life, I guess I would have to say the gambling addiction admission was probably a tougher place.
Which is really, the gravity of that shouldn't be lost on anybody, because your sexuality is not a choice. And it's an interesting answer you gave, and I appreciate it. And I would say this, I've never met you. I hope one day we do get to meet and hug it out, because I'm really proud of you and your journey. But this partner of yours, you are a very lucky man. It sounds like you are blessed with an angel in your life who has had your back through, and you know, thick and thin. And I would say you're very, very fortunate to have him in your life.
He is an absolute miracle, and I think you describing him as an angel, not that he doesn't have his own faults, but
for sure, right.
But we all do, right? But his heart, his soul, it's why I'm the luckiest man walking around today, and that I'm still alive in great part is because of him and his support and his continued efforts in working on himself and me and us together. It's a really special place to be.
Before I let you go, I know you're in a position where you counsel young guys that now come into your GA room who are at step one of this. And I always end the show with Dan by asking you, you know, there's somebody listening right now who's where you were 3 years ago. Walls are caving in, no way to overcome it, might not want to wake up tomorrow morning, all those thoughts that we've all had. You know, what do you say to the person that's where you were 3 years ago that doesn't think they can ever get past the addiction or live a day without gambling, let alone 3 years without gambling, who want to use your story as the kind of impetus to recognize they can do it? What do you tell those people about your journey and where they are now at day one?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, but I guess to boil it down is there is hope, but it is up to every individual to get to that place of step one, which is I no longer have the capability of gambling like a normal person. I have lost control. My life is unmanageable. And I am a compulsive gambler. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, struggle with step one, and why there's such a low retention rate in recovery is because people feel like they're losing the power in their life to choose what they want to do. And the ironic thing about that is when you get to step one and you admit that powerlessness, you now are on your way to being able to actually have choice in your life. Because when you're in the addiction, the addiction's choosing everything for you. You know, at least that's my experience. So if you can just get to that place of putting down the pride and the ego and saying, I can't do this on my own, I need help, whether that's GA, whether it's therapy, there's all kinds of opportunity out there. You just can't do it alone, you know? And if you are advocating for yourself, or like we say in GA, if you are your own sponsor, you have the worst sponsor in the world because you're the last person that you gambled with. And that's the worst person that you want to try to figure it out for yourself. There is help and hope, but you have to come to that place as an individual, because recovery is not for people who need it. It's for people who want it. And if you don't want it enough for yourself, you're not going to stay. And give it a shot, ask for help. And there's many, many of us out there who are willing to extend that hand, give you a hug, and help you through it when you're ready to do it.
Well said. I'm smiling right now. I imagine Dan is too, because one of the great quotes someone ever gave us on the show was this: don't take advice from the last person you gambled with, which is usually, you know, the guy that looks at you in the mirror. So I really appreciate you sharing your story, and congrats on the 3 years and, you know, moving in the right direction. And I hope you continue to share your story. And like I said, I'd love to meet you one day, and I can't thank you enough. Very proud of you as well. And keep doing what you're doing, because it's awesome. And it's a beacon of light for people who, like I said, are at step one of this recovery. So thank you again, and appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Craig and Dan. It's been a total pleasure. Look forward to meeting you too.
Take care.
Thank you, brother.
All right, Dan, that was a heavy one. Before I let you go, I think it's great that, you know, he's able to share that story and let people know, you know, whether it's gambling addiction or not, that there are things that come up in life that seem out of your control that are very tough to handle. But the key of it is owning that part of it, putting your ego aside. And it's okay to raise your hand. I know it's not the manly thing to do, but it's okay to raise your hand and say, I need help. And that's exactly why he's in such a good place today.
Yeah, I think sometimes we're just conditioned to kind of figure it out ourselves, right? Like, I don't want to admit a weakness. I know I'll figure this out. I'm a smart individual. I know what I'm doing. I'll make the changes. I'll make the corrections. I'll just get it right next time. But we start living that definition of insanity, right? Doing that same damn thing over and over, expecting a different result. Yeah. And I love that he brought up that quote, you know, don't take advice from the last person you gamble with, because it's so true. You know, we are not our own expert in ourselves, because we have too much invested, and we need that third party intervention, and we need a great support network, which he highlighted. He's got great support and just a great relationship.
Well, always appreciate you. Now that we're back from a little summer vacation, you'll have new shows virtually every single weekend right here on The Fan. That's Dan Trillaro. Dan, tell everybody the name of the company you work for as well.
That's IC360.
If you are out there, whether it's a loved one of yours or you yourself, I promise you there is help out there. There are people that care. And it just starts with being willing to pick up the phone or go online and finding a room where you can be surrounded by people that understand what it's like, you know, to be a gambling addict like I am, like Dan is. Once you're willing to take that first step, the road to recovery can begin, and you can change your life for the better. There's no doubt about that. Joe Beningo's coming up next. Appreciate you listening. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.